A simulated robot arm reaches for the handle of a side table drawer, tries to pull it open, and the grip slips. The drawer doesn't budge, nothing dramatic about it. But this is only the second thing this robot has ever tried to do, and nobody assigned it that drawer. It picked the task itself, and about 14 iterations later, that exact failure becomes the thing that lets it open a cabinet it has never seen. That lineage, from a fumbled drawer to a solved cabinet, is the beating heart of a paper that went up on archive on June 17, 2026, and we're recording just 2 days later. Quick ground rules before we dig in. This episode is AI-generated. The script was written by Anthropic's Claude Opus 4.8. The paper is called Playful Agentic Robot Learning, and the two voices you're hearing, I'm Bella, and Eric joins me in a moment, are both AI voices from 11 Labs. Neither company produces this show. And the reason that drawer-to-cabinet trace matters is that it's the whole thesis in miniature. A robot that plays before anyone gives it a job.
Plays before anyone gives it a job. Lovely phrase, but I want to slow down on the word play because in a robotics paper, that could mean almost anything. My mental image of a curious robot is something flailing around, poking at objects at random. That's not what's going on here, is it?
No, and the distinction is the whole contribution. The authors are deliberate that play here is a skill acquisition process, not aimless exploration. And to see why that's even possible now, you have to know what kind of robot we're talking about. Rather than one giant neural network that takes camera pixels in one end and pushes motor commands out the other, this is what's called a code as policy agent. When you hand it a task, a language model literally writes a short program, calls a perception tool to find the mug, a grasping tool to pick it up, a motion tool to move the arm, runs that little script, watches what happens, and rewrites the code if it failed.
So the robot is basically writing itself a Python script for put the mug on the plate, running it, and debugging it.
Exactly. And that detail unlocks everything, because if a behavior works, the robot can save it. As an ordinary, documented function, it can call again. A success isn't a faint adjustment buried in a billion weights. It's a named recipe. That's what makes playing pay off. Every good outcome can be crystallized into something reusable, and honestly, something you could just email to another robot.
And the gap they're pointing at is that these agents only ever learn reactively. Somebody assigns a task, the agent solves it, and whatever skills it picks up are byproducts of that assignment. Nobody's asking what the robot should practice before the assignments show up.
Which is exactly how the authors frame it against human development. A toddler doesn't sit in a corner waiting for instructions. They poke at things, figure out what they can control, and practice routines right at the edge of what they can already do. There's a genuinely charming detail in the prompt they hand the task-proposing agent. They literally tell it to behave like a 3 to 4 year old child exploring the robot's world. See one object, reach for it, do one simple thing. So let me make this concrete with that drawer story, because it's the moment the whole system clicked for me. Early in a play session, the robot decides to try pulling open a side table drawer. It fails. But the failure isn't logged as just, nope. The system looks at why it broke, and a component called the skill proposer drafts two little helper functions, one that figures out which direction to pull, and one that picks a grasp that's actually compatible with pulling rather than, say, lifting. A few iterations later, the robot is playing with a completely different object, and it reuses those two helpers. And this time, they work. They start earning a track record. Then, at evaluation time, it gets a task it was never trained on, open a cabinet. And it composes those same two helpers, pull direction, pull compatible grasp, and opens it.
Okay, that's a genuinely nice trace. But let me push on what's actually being saved, because I think a listener could hear that and picture a lookup table. The robot files away cabinet equals these moves and just retrieves it later.
That's the trap. And the cabinet is exactly why it's not that. The robot never practiced cabinets. There was no cabinet entry to look up. What it saved were two general parameterized pieces: how to pull, how to grasp for pulling, and at test time, it recombined them for an object it had never encountered. It's closer to learning the idea of a pulling motion than memorizing a specific door.
So, Bella, the part I keep snagging on is how it decides what to play with in the first place. If it's inventing its own tasks, what stops it from either trying to disassemble the whole kitchen or just opening the same drawer 1,000 times?
That's the cleverest piece, and it's an old idea finding a new home. It's the Goldilocks principle, not too easy, not too hard. The proposer generates a pool of candidate tasks, and each one gets scored by multiplying two things together. The first is novelty. Has the robot rarely tried this particular object and skill combination? The second is learnability, and this is the part I love. It peaks when the robot currently succeeds at the required skills about half the time.
Half the time specifically. Why half?
Because the extremes teach you nothing. A task you nail every single time has nothing left to give. A task you fail every single time, you can't learn from either. You never get a success to crystallize. The sweet spot is the task you can do about half the time. It's the video game logic of grinding the level you clear maybe one try in two. Hard enough to stretch you, winnable enough that you actually get reps. Multiply novelty by that, and the robot gets pulled toward tasks that are both fresh and right at the edge of its ability.
And presumably there's some guard against the robot fooling itself, getting lucky once and deciding it's mastered something.
There is, and it's a small thing I appreciate. When they estimate how good the robot is at a skill, they don't use the raw success rate. They use a conservative lower bound estimate. So a skill that worked exactly once out of one attempt doesn't get treated as a reliable tool. You have to actually earn the reputation. And that reputation system runs through the whole skill library. Every attempt goes through what they call a write, execute, verify, diagnose loop, and the verifying part is the secret ingredient. Instead of one signal that says the task passed or failed, there are separate checks. Was the plan physically sensible? Was the code safe? Did the final goal get met? Did each individual step work? So when something breaks, the diagnoser can say, the grasp was fine, but the placement drifted, instead of just failed.
That's the coach versus scoreboard difference. An athlete who only sees the final score has no idea what to fix. A coach watching each drill can tell you the grip was right, but your footwork slipped.
Exactly that. And it means the robot can keep the good half of an attempt and only fix the broken half. There's even a lovely move where if one stubborn sub-action keeps failing, some tricky grasp, it spins off a little sub-agent to practice just that one piece in isolation, like drilling free throws. Successful behaviors get saved as experimental skills, get promoted to verified once they keep working, and get quietly deprecated if they keep failing. The library curates itself. Over 150 iteration run, it grew from 6 helper functions to 27, and the failure memory grew too, from a handful of lessons to over 100. It's accumulating what worked and what didn't.
Okay, so this is a beautiful story, and I came in ready to be unmoved by a beautiful story. Let's talk about whether the playing actually buys you anything. The headline. On a benchmark called Libero Pro, the no-play baseline succeeds about 23% of the time. Let it play first, and that jumps to roughly 44%, a gain of about 20 points. On a second benchmark, a similar story, about 17 points of improvement.
And for context on how hard these benchmarks are, the end-to-end alternatives, the big vision language action models that map pixels plus instructions straight to motion, basically fall over here.
They do. And this is the number that made me sit up. Two of those end-to-end policies score literally 0% on Libero Pro. Zero. The best one manages about 13%. So the play-based system more than triples the strongest black box model on this particular benchmark. But I want to be careful because there's a yes but buried in here.
The yes but being that 44% still means it fails more than half the time.
Right. These are exciting deltas on humble levels. Doubling 23% is genuinely less impressive than nudging 80 up to 90. And the paper does lead with the relative gain. I want that on the record. But here's the objection I actually care about, the one I'd raise in a review. That whole play phase costs compute, about 30 million tokens for a 50 iteration session. So the obvious deflating explanation is, you didn't discover anything clever about learning. You just spent a pile of extra compute, and of course, more compute helps. If I gave your plain baseline that same budget at test time, let it retry more, think harder in the moment, wouldn't it just catch up?
And this is the experiment that makes the paper, because they ran exactly that fair fight. They took the 30 million tokens of play, amortized it across the 60 test tasks, and worked out it's roughly enough to let the baseline run about 15 retry attempts instead of 10. So, same compute, two ways to spend it. Give the baseline those extra retries, more guesses at test time, and it climbs from 23% to 26, barely moves. Spend the identical budget on playing first, then walk in, it climbs to 32.
Same budget. More than double the gain from preparation versus retrying.
It's the studying before the exam result. Two students, same hours. One retakes the exam over and over, scribbling more guesses each time. The other studies first, builds up worked examples, and walks in once. The studier wins. And the reason that's more than a cute finding is that it lines up with a real shift in how people are thinking about agents in general. Spend compute before the query arrives, digesting experience into structured memory, instead of only throwing more attempts at it in the moment.
I'll give them that one, Bella. It's the cleanest result in the paper, and it does preempt my favorite objection. The other thing that surprised me is transfer, which in robotics is usually where dreams go to die. Skills learned in one simulator almost never survive being moved somewhere else.
And they moved them three ways, right? To a different simulator, to a different robot body, and onto a real physical robot.
All three. Take the skills the robot learned on a single-arm setup, drop them as plug-and-play functions into a held-out simulator it never played in. About 9 points of improvement on average. Fine. But the one that got a genuine, wait, really? Out of me? A two-arm lifting task improved by 24 points. Skills practiced with one arm, helping a two-arm collaborative task.
That's the guitarist picking up a bass flavor. The instrument isn't identical, but the sense of timing and finger placement partly carries. Although I'm guessing, Eric, that's not the whole transfer story.
No, and I want to be honest here because this is where the steel man lives. That 24-point jump is one task out of seven on that simulator. Of the other six, a couple showed basically no change, and one, a two-arm handover, actually got worse by 4 points. The authors themselves flag that improper skill reuse can hurt when a retrieved skill doesn't fit the new task. So the transfer story is genuinely mixed. A couple flat, one real regression in the pile.
And the real robot numbers, those are modest too.
Modest is fair. Skills exported straight from simulated play onto a real robot, no fine-tuning. Cube picking went from 35 to about 42%. A second real-world set went from about 3% to 25%. The most striking single one, a swap the cubes task where the plain baseline scored 0 out of 30, and the skill-augmented version solved 7. Now, 7 out of 30 is not a robot you'd deploy, but 0 to 7, crossing the sim to real gap with no retraining at all? That's the part that's actually surprising.
So, Eric, if you had to name the reservation you can't shake, the one that survives all these nice deltas, what is it?
Two threads, and they twist together. The first is just how heavy this thing is. It's a dozen-plus language model and vision model agents, a proposer, planners, a stack of verifiers, a diagnoser, memory curators. The bulk of that 30 million token play cost is the failure diagnoser and the code writer churning through repeated physical failures. So a fair reviewer asks, how much of the win is the elegant Goldilocks idea, and how much is just the enormous volume of structured feedback being poured into every attempt? The matched compute ablation pushes back on the crude version of that. Random play under the same budget barely helps. So the curiosity rule is doing something. But it can't fully untangle the elegant idea from the sheer machinery around it. And the second thread, the one I really can't put down. The place this system shines brightest is exactly the place where it practiced. The play environments and the in-domain benchmarks overlap. When you push it to the genuinely held-out cases, the new simulator, the real robot, the gains shrink to single digits. So the most honest reading is that this is a promising proof of concept and a genuinely useful reframing, not a robot you're trusting with your kitchen. And the play is only ever as rich as the simulator you hand it. It can't practice affordances its little world doesn't contain.
I think that's fair, and the authors are refreshingly direct about most of it. They say outright that evaluation is still mostly simulation-based, that play is bounded by the diversity of the sim, and that the whole thing leans heavily on vision model verification that can be wrong. What I'd put on the other side of the scale is that the conceptual contribution doesn't actually depend on the success rates being high yet.
Say more about that, because that's where I think we partly disagree.
The durable idea is that a coding agent can manufacture its own curriculum, attempt it, and crystallize successes into readable, portable functions. And that doing that beats spending the same compute on retries. Even if today's absolute numbers are humble, that mechanism is the thing that compounds. The skill library grew from 6 functions to 27 on its own. Across 400 evaluation trials, 391 of them called at least one learned skill, over 5,000 skill calls total. The robot genuinely stopped rederiving everything from pixels and geometry every single time and started calling things it had taught itself.
I'll grant the mechanism is the real contribution. I'm still not sure the matched compute result fully isolates the idea from the machinery. That's the one I'm carrying out of here. But as a reframing of when an agent should spend its effort, that part lands.
And maybe that's the right note to end on, because the reframing travels beyond robots. The practical version is almost mundane. Because every skill is just a documented function, you can run the play phase once, export the library, and drop it into a completely different, even simpler, robot agent, with no retraining and no touching the underlying model. You amortize a robot's childhood once and reuse the competence. The deeper version is the one we kept circling. In a world obsessed with throwing more compute at the moment of the question, here's a concrete, measured case where the better move was to spend it beforehand, building structured, inspectable memory and arriving already prepared. The show notes have a link to the paper and some related reading if this one caught you. And if you want the full transcript with every bit of jargon tappable, plus the concept pages that tie this episode to the others we've done, that's all on paperdive.ai.
A robot that fumbles a drawer and turns the fumble into the thing that opens a door it's never seen. Even at 7 out of 30, I want to see where that goes.
Thanks for listening to AI Papers, a deep dive.